He taught for 50 years at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Tune in next week when we continue our conversation with Noam Chomsky about Gaza, Israel's new nationality law, the recent Trump-Putin summit, Iran, North Korea, the war in Yemen, and more. In December, Noam Chomsky will be celebrating his 90th birthday. Oh, and happy birthday to Rob Young here at Democracy Now! And Democracy Now! Has a job opening for a broadcast engineer in our New York studio. Find out more at democracynow.org.
Coming up this morning on KBOO, next on Positively Revolting, Ani takes your calls and speaks with James of Rose City Antifa. The time now is 8 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland.
Did you know that KBOO podcasts all our news and talk shows?
You can find the podcast on KBOO's website, kboo.fm, on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Just search for your favorite show and hit subscribe to get all the latest episodes downloaded to your favorite device.
Or search for KBOO on iTunes, Google Play to get all the KBOO podcasts.
Oregon Historical Society is featuring 50 years of KBOO. The exhibit was created to relay our history and demonstrate the importance of community radio, featuring archival photographs and ephemera collected from KBOO's 5 decades of broadcasting. The exhibit tells our story in our members' own collective words. Our online tour features highlights from the exhibit and companion audio clips to enrich visitors' experiences. The exhibit runs until July 29th at the Oregon Historical Society at 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information and audio clips can be found at 50yearsofkboo.fm.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time.
And good morning, good morning. It is 3 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, your very own community radio station. This is Positively Revolting. I'm Ani. I'll be your host this morning, and this morning I'm here with James. James is here with Rose City Antifa, and we'll be talking about the work of Rose City Antifa, actions coming up, and trying to put national white supremacy, the happenings, the events, sort of in context, and talking about resisting fascism. That's what this show is about until 9 a.m. this morning. Thank you for joining us. And good morning, James.
Hey, good morning, Annie. How you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Let's start at the very top. Let's start at the basics of you're here because of your work with Rosity Antifa. For anyone that may have not been paying any attention for the last 5 to 11 years, what is Rosity Antifa? What is the work that you do?
All right, so Rosity Antifa is a non-sectarian anti-fascist group. Basically, we believe in not allowing fascists to platform whatsoever. So that's really our main goal. We a lot of times there's a misunderstanding that we're here to try to build the left into various factions and bring people into a big tent, but we really have a very narrow focus on stopping fascists from organizing and from being able to further propagate their beliefs into the mainstream.
So it's a very focused perspective, and specifically one that is there to stop fascist messages and fascist organizing.
Absolutely. So we also want to provide a space for the rest of the left to be able to flourish also. That's kind of like the underlying idea is to, if fascists are ruling the streets, there's not going to be a place for people on the left, maybe people who have different capabilities and what they can do to be able to go out and actually organize, you know, in a manner that they want to.
Yeah, let's unpack that a little bit more. So that, I mean, to me, what you're saying is that that this group is having this very, very focused approach to specifically combat fascism, white supremacy, the hate groups that we have seen flourish, you know, over the last several years, but really sort of exponentially over the last year, that you are there opposing that so that others can continue other forms of left organizing.
Absolutely. Now, Portland as a whole has a history of white supremacy that stretches way back to the 80s. So there's a little bit of history.
And before, yes.
And before, yeah. So there's a little bit of history here. It's just kind of been whitewashed, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And some of those more outrageous elements are now just starting to come back due to the rise of Trump and rise of different various groups such as Patriot Paris. They are allowing those hate groups to platform where they are, wherever they go.
Right. And so let's go ahead and fast forward to Patriot Prayer. This is one of the most active arrangements, I guess, of the alt-right, the fascist right, that we have seen recently. You know, it's a group. They got a brand. They got a name. They're mobilizing. They're calling actions. They've had several in Portland and the surrounding areas, and there's another one coming up next week, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, on August 4th, Patriot Prayer definitely plans to hold a rally. They're going to bring what I guess you could call dignitaries into town.
It's a word. I don't know that I could ever apply that to. But okay, yeah. They're going to bring some reps from their group that we might know names of and stuff. Okay.
Well, I don't want to give them any dignity by calling them dignitaries.
That's what I'm thinking.
But it's more of a mocking, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I got it. So they're having a shindig on the 4th of August. And of course, this is not ever good news, right? When there's a gathering of the alt-right, when there's a gathering of people spreading messages of white supremacy and hate. And so Rosity Antifa is looking at what this means to the city. You want to talk a little bit about what happened perhaps the last time Patriot Prayer were here and how you've been sort of understanding that group.
All right. So from my understanding, especially their last two events, they really have been trying to amp up their activities to kind of kill the left in their spirit so they can gain a little bit more traction. We know Portland, and we know the reputation that Portland has. And there seems to be this idea that if they could bring Portland down or they can bring Berkeley down, that they will be able to progress their ideas in the very liberal strongholds that and they don't. Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
And there seems to be this idea that if they can attack us in our, I guess you could say your homeland.
Yeah. You know, it's like I think that, well, the left coast, right? You know, the left coast has a reputation for being one of the more radical or progressive areas of the country. And certainly we're seeing them try to make a real strong inroad into Portland, which of course also, as you've mentioned, has a long history of white supremacy problems.
Yeah, absolutely. So the thing that's going to happen on the 4th, with Patriot Prayer bringing in Alex Jones, with them bringing in Gavin McGinnis, which may or may not be up in the air, who knows.
Right.
The idea is to come through Portland and then blaze a path down to Berkeley the very next day. So our main goal is to basically resist them to the point where they wouldn't be able to really make it to Berkeley.
Mm-hmm. So they're kind of doing this thing like a West Coast tour, right? So it's Portland, it's Berkeley. It was another situation, another city in California, perhaps a little bit later on. And it kind of gets me to wondering, you know, what is this about? This is, you know, to me, looks like very intentional numbers gathering, sort of taking a very strong stance that we are here, we are openly fascist and proud of it. I mean, you know, it's like, and now we're taking it on tour, so come on down, you know, bring the kids. I'm not used to seeing, I guess, and I'm happy I'm not used to seeing this kind of organizing, this kind of very open organizing from white supremacists. Usually that has gone on in a much more low-key, but always present, you know, fashion. This is really stark. This is really open. And so what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think it's a obvious attempt to mainstream these ideas, use our public squares to launch themselves. I think the whole thing with Joey Gibson is just a very public attempt to become the SS for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about it that way, there's this idea that, oh, it's just a bunch of guys who they want to fight downtown and that's what their main purpose is. No, they're definitely auditioning for a role. There's a reason why Joey Gibson is putting himself out there as a political candidate even at this point, because he wants that role. And it, people call them bootlickers, and it's the perfect term to describe what's going on now.
Southern Poverty Law Center just released something yesterday, I guess Wednesday actually, that is drawing attention to this upcoming action and to Gavin McGinnis as a part of it. Proud Boys founder Gavin McGinnis, they're quoting him saying, "Fighting solves everything." And that, you know, they have a history of glorifying violence. I'm going to go ahead and put a link to this article on our Positively Revolting page on Facebook. And so other people can avail themselves of this information. But the glorification of violence that the Proud Boys have, let's back up for a second to talk about the Proud Boys. Actually, Rosity Antifa has just come out with a multi-part investigative report around the Proud Boys. Who are the Proud Boys? What are we talking about when we say Proud Boys?
Right, now, Proud Boys are a somewhat fraternal group that who are very much the definition of the fascist creep. They have repackaged their fascism into a frat boy-esque. Mm-hmm. They almost make a joke of themselves so they can creep their ideas in on the lower end. It's definitely something that the toxic masculinity that goes into that is mm-hmm. astounding to me.
And that's something that I think really bears a lot of scrutiny. I'm going to throw out our phone number so other people can join in this conversation and try to kick the frog out of my throat there for a second. The phone number is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. This is Ani. You're listening to Positively Revolting here on KABU, your community radio station. I'm talking with James from Rose City Antifa, and we are talking about white supremacy, fascist organizing, the Proud Boys, the action that has been threatened to take place in Portland from Patriot Prayer and Proud Boys. That will be coming up next week from Saturday on August 4th. All of these things and oh so much more, and of course the organizing work that has to be done counter this. So that's what we're talking about this morning. Please do join us by calling in 503-231-8187. Also want to remind folks that you can follow along on Facebook throughout the week, because once a week to talk and gather is not quite enough. So we do have a Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook, Positively Revolting. You can find us in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. And if anyone wants to explain Instagram to me, you could probably find us there sometime soon too, but I don't understand Instagram. Okay, so there, I've said it. I've admitted it in public. I'm old. So let's go ahead and back up and talk about that incredible mix that is toxic masculinity and white supremacy and fascism, and how these dynamics are kind of feeding each other. And we saw that very clearly with Jordan, Jordan Peterson.
Jordan Peterson,
when he came, earlier this month, and Rosity Antifa and other thoughtful people were there to draw attention to him and his extremely toxic message. And talk about these hideous dynamics sort of feeding into each other in this new movement of fascism we're seeing.
Well, it's weird because I was just thinking about McGinnis and his history. As most everyone knows, Gavin McGinnis is one of the co-founders of Vice Magazine. And I remember when I was younger reading Vice Magazine and reading the do's and don'ts section, which in retrospect, it has all these warning signs that I should have knew, like all this heteronormative like behavior that was being pushed on people via their dress, like, oh, right, this guy looks cool because he has a leather jacket on, or this girl looks better because she is wearing a skirt the way women are supposed to. We should have knew that he was.
Might have picked up that message earlier.
But when I was young, I didn't really pick. I was turned off by it, but it doesn't surprise me that someone that was pushing that kind of message has turned into this now. But it's weird because of instead of trying to appeal to like maybe the counterculture, he has decided to go in the opposite direction. It's one of the scariest things about this current moment, because they actually think that at this moment they are the counterculture.
And that's a weird thought, isn't it? I hadn't put that together, actually. And I think That's fascinating. I just knew I didn't necessarily want to read Vice very much. It just didn't seem to like that's not for me, but huh. Yeah, we might have seen that one coming. Let's see. Let's go ahead and take a caller, 503-231-8187, the number to call into. Good morning. Teresa, you are on the air.
Hi, I just can't stay off the air, I guess. No, I'll try not to make a habit of this, but I want to express my sincere gratitude to Antifa as a transgender gal because, you know, they're making things that much worse for me. When I go out in public, when I go out in the street, now I have to deal with the fact that we have this demagogue, this homophobic, racist demagogue in office. And I have been seeing Patriot Pair, for example, those fascists showed up at Occupy ICE, and it is their intention, through their history of murder and violence and through intimidation from people like me who know their history, to keep me off the streets and to make me afraid and to keep me from expressing myself and expressing my opinion and even my presence and my existence on the street. But I have Antifa. I am so grateful. I am so grateful. And that is all I have to say.
Hey, thanks very much for your call this morning, Teresa. It's, I think, certainly we can underscore that a few times, that there, and you mentioned this in passing earlier, James, that there is this moment where we are seeing what really looks like a little replaying of history. And it used to be, you know, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, there was the sort of cliche that the person that starts making the analogies to Hitler or World War II or whatever loses the argument because, you know, you've just, you know, hit the hyperbole switch. But now, actually, it's not hyperbole. And anyone who is a serious student of history is going to be seeing some analogies right about now. And I think what Teresa was just referring to certainly is that there's this demagogue and there are the shock troops, and that we are definitely watching the Proud Boys and the Patriot Prayer and this sort of several little cells of alt-right toxicity melding together to form what really looks like the current iteration of brown shirts, the shock troops that are going to be the violent enforcers of the demagogues' vitriol. What's your response to that?
Oh yeah, I definitely think that is the main goal here. When like I said earlier, they are auditioning to be those guys. Mm-hmm. They are addition to be the brown shirts or to be the SS.
Mm-hmm.
In historical, when you look back at the history of that these are not official government entities.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as if they were the police and they have official capacity
mm-hmm.
within the state. Those type of groups do form to support those kind of regimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually almost absolutely necessary for them to even survive.
Right, because, of course, the regime is an illegitimate regime ruling from an extreme minority, right? And so in order to actually exercise their control as an authoritarian regime, they, quote, need this sort of violent front to do the dirty work for them, to intimidate the population, to push the message quite pointedly into the mainstream. And again, as we're looking at the growth of this movement, and as you noted, looking at the roster of invited guests for their action on August 4th, that certainly seems to be pushing that message further into the mainstream and trying to make clear inroads for this ideology that is so toxic.
Yeah. When you see the F-grade celebrities that they're bringing in, you have a pretty firm idea that they think this is a big, They think this is a big deal. This is a very, has deep strategic value for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I can only implore the community to come out and oppose them face to face.
So how do people stay in touch and understand how to support anti-fascist efforts? How do people find out what's going on?
Well, I can do the whole roll call of
please do
places. Okay, I like doing this.
Yeah. Good, it's getting that information out there. It's important information.
Hey, now you can always look up Rosie Antifa on Facebook. In this particular action on August 4th, that would be the main source of where you would need to go to. We do have a call for action on our main website, rosecityantifa.org. You can also peruse our articles, especially our last six articles about the Proud Boys. As a group, just want to say we are really, really proud of that. This took actual years of research about the group and about individuals and actually coming to a place where we realized the threat that particular group posed. And it took a lot of observation to finally get there. But, I'm getting off track. Also, you can follow us
We can go back to that series because it is a totally impressive series. But how else can people get in touch?
You can also definitely get in touch with us at our Twitter and Always Anti-Fascist, Road City Antifa. Either one of those will pop it up for you. And we really appreciate if people have, you see anything that happens, definitely email us at fightthembackatriseup.net.
All right. That's a good roster. It's a good list. And again, I will also be trying to make as many links there on our Facebook page as we can. Because it's really important to stay in touch. It's really important to keep each other aware of what's going on. So let's go ahead and talk to Jessica. Good morning, Jessica.
Hello. I just wanted to call and comment on the Proud Boys and just that they're obviously like really frustrating and like a disgusting group of humans, but I think what makes them like more comfortable and like doing everything that they do is that they get a lot of like media attention and just like general like acceptance from a lot of people, and it's just really annoying. It's frustrating. I don't know. Yeah, that's basically it. I don't know.
Okay. Thanks very much for your call this morning. It's a frustrating moment of all of these. I think there's a lot of anxiety right now, right? And so how do we actually transcend this like angst, this frustration, this to I think I'm actually going to go to the how do we get out of being reactive, because at this point, you know, anti-fascist organizing by its nature is reactive, right? Rose City Antifa is there to combat the work of fascists, but how do we maybe get a little bit ahead of the curve? How do people of conscience who are kind of sick of watching this phenomenon grow, what do we do to actually get out from being reactive and actually start looking at educating folks overall on the dangers of fascism, the dangers of toxic masculinity, the dangers of white supremacy, and how to recognize it in these in smaller ways before they add up to these large confrontations like we're seeing?
All right, well, the thing is, when you're in a moment of fascism, once the fascist creep has occurred, and now, hello, fascism is here. Unfortunately, it is a very reactive process for if you do anti-fascist work, if you're anywhere on the left, the spectrum of the left, and you do work. Unfortunately, it's time to dig in our heels. It's time to say, hey, this is what we are as a community. And unfortunately, that means sometimes we have to confront people face-to-face in the streets, at least show that we have the presence that we are not going to go away.
Yeah.
And if when you talk about groups that have always been disadvantaged, any member of the queer community, racial minorities, religious minorities, they always are going to be under danger no matter what. At this moment has just highlighted mm-hmm. how vulnerable that those communities are. And if you have the privilege to stand up or try to oppose that, that's what you have to do at this moment. There's no other time that you're going to be able to do this.
Right, like the time is now or oops. We don't want to wait for that oops, like dang, too late, right? Because what happens then? We know, again, any student of history can see this, and we don't want that. We don't want to get there. There's enough violence. There's too much violence perpetrated against our marginalized communities as it is without this exponential toxic growth. And I do mean growth, kind of like a tumor, from the fascists and from the white supremacists. We are looking at also the significant anniversary, the first anniversary of Charlottesville, where white supremacists took to the streets in numbers, capturing national media attention, where they killed one person, where they severely beat and injured other people. And then we have the so-called president of this country coming out and saying, oh, well, you know, there's a bunch of people there. There are a lot of good people in that crowd. And you know, these people that came to, you know, fight them in the streets are all a part of the problem and can't, you know, they're all the same. What the heck, right? And so we know where Trump's base is. And there's very specific reasons why he is not decrying the right-wing violence, because that is his base, right?
Absolutely.
that's where he goes. And so with that, a year ago, looking at the organizing that's happened, looking at, you know, where are you seeing things heading nationally at this point?
I don't think that the August 4th thing here or the August 5th thing in Berkeley is actually any accident whatsoever. I think it is a purposeful ramping up of activity to kind of commemorate that Charlottesville. Whether Unite the Right 2 is going to happen or not, in these situations, I do think they're trying to ramp it up to kind of commemorate in their own twisted way that event.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to give them any pressure of them having scruples, but I definitely think they want to celebrate that in one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can say is that we can't allow them to do that in our backyard.
Right. Yeah, makes sense to me. 503-231-8187, the number to call. You are listening to Positively Revolting on KBOO, your community radio station. I'm Ani. I want to let you know, coming up at 9 o'clock, One Land, Many Voices is going to be on the air, presenting excerpts from the Winnipeg Talk addressing the relocation of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. At 10 o'clock, Valley Views will be relaying personal tales of how Black women who look nothing alike are often mistaken for each other. At 10:15, we'll listen to Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock, it's Pacific Underground, a show for and by Asian and Pacific Islanders in the Northwest. All of these KBOO programs have been made possible by your support, dear members. If you are not already a member, or if you have a little extra to contribute, please go to kboo.fm and click donate and, support your independent community radio station. Again, I'm Ani. I'm here with James from Rose City Antifa. and we are talking about anti-fascist organizing, the toxic mix of ideologies that go into the current alt-right stew of, I'm just going to loop back around, the toxic stew of the, yes, it's, I can't really get away from the word toxic this morning, because when I'm thinking about them, really, it's just, it's like the worst of the worst. It's the worst form of male supremacy and misogyny. It's the worst of the white supremacists. It's the worst of classes. I mean, it's just toxic. Ew.
Some of the things that are celebrated are just beyond the pale. We celebrate being awful people.
Right.
And we feel it's our right to be able to do that. It's one of the weirdest things is their free speech thing that they always run behind. That's their banner that they try to hide behind.
Go ahead and tell us more about that.
And when the main thing that I think about is earlier you brought up Trump saying there were people on the ground, there were good people on the ground, and
as it relates to Charlottesville,
and they don't understand that when the left shows up in whatever form, whether that is an anti-fascist group or just general picketers or whatever, union organizers, that's an expression of free speech also. Just because free speech doesn't mean that people can't react to what you're saying.
It doesn't mean that you get to say what you're saying without any consequence, right?
Absolutely. Like, the free speech provision of the Constitution is to keep the government from stopping you to say stuff. It's to keep the state from intervening in that. But for regular citizens to intervene, it's perfectly allowable. It's perfectly allowable for our community to say, we will not accept this.
And I'm going to go ahead and say it's perfectly important to not accept this because it is the shutdown of so many. It's the basis of community self-defense, and to not shut down speech that advocates the direct harm of marginalized community members is to say, well, if those community members get harmed, I guess, you know, it's just all a part of the mix. No, it's not, right? This is community self-defense. What I firmly believe that anyone acting to stop white supremacy and this mix of white supremacy with toxic masculinity, with authoritarianism, with the extreme homophobia, with the all of that together, that is community self-defense. Because let's face facts, they're not talking about just making some happy speeches and going away. We see that after their actions in June here in Portland, I believe it was pretty much the next day that somebody identified with the Proud Boys just punched someone close to the Lloyd Center because they're perceived as being in the LGBTQ community. And so I think that was Tiny, what's his face? This is not just a message, right? These guys come absolutely prepared for and not only talking about intimidation, but then actually physically carrying out these threats of intimidation.
Yeah, we're starting to see them do this more and more. It's starting to move beyond just we are doing a march, we're going to say some things. It's starting to actualize on the streets.
Right.
And the true manner of what they want to do is starting to come out more and more. Attacking people on the streets randomly is to build that climate of fear. They want us to go back to where to hide, to assimilate into what they're doing. So it's purposeful. It's being, we started to see the threats like kind of ratchet up online. And we have kind of a saying, we're like, if someone says they're gonna do something, we're going to tend to believe them.
Right.
And that's here we smart. Go. Here we go. They said they were going to do it. They actually are doing it.
Let's go ahead and take another caller. Let's talk to Karen. Good morning, Karen. You're on the air.
Good morning, Ani, and thank you for taking the call. I first wanted to kind of chime in with Teresa and say thank you. And to is it James who is there for Antifa?
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking of Charlottesville when Cornel West said that he believed he would have been killed if some of the Antifa folks hadn't protected him. On the whole, I'm an old lady. I'm on the whole, I worry about you young folks a lot, and for me personally, I go the nonviolent route. Doesn't mean I won't be subjected to violence from the other side, but I do worry very much about young people. I wanted to just deepen a little bit the discussion about the rise of Nazi-esque groups and symptoms of this right-wing monstrous thing that's happening, and just point out that the immigrant folks are being scapegoated in some ways very much as the Jews were for the crimes of the state and for the corporate sins, so to speak, and that immigrant justice is about pointing out we have to educate people that we're responsible in many ways for the reasons that refugees and asylum seekers are here. We've devastated the Middle East. We've caused at least 5 million refugees, internal and external, in Iraq. That was data that I got from years back. It could be much worse now. And that we've caused American refugees and asylum seekers to come here. We've supported every dictator in Central America and overthrown one democratic regime, elected regime after another.
Mm-hmm.
But that it's, we are, that what the government is doing is they're pointing at people who are basically innocent and abused and horribly exploited and saying they're to blame. They're taking your cookie. We take 99 cookies. There's one cookie left. They take your cookie, when in fact it's the corporations and the government that are really to blame. And then people are pitted against one another in ways that are cruel and very, very sad. So I agree with Ani. I agree with you that there is there are increasing signs of brutalization of immigrants, and the infestation word has been used,
yeah.
And they're being treated as if they were vermin, put in cages, and so
yeah.
on. These are really ugly things. Separation of children from parents has happened. You know, this happened during the Holocaust, and I don't have any simple answers. I obviously, I mean. But I do think we do have to stand up, absolutely have to stand up against this thing, because if we don't, it just is like a giant, immense thing that just rolls over everything in its way. So thank you again, James, and God bless you, and I hope you stay safe, dear. Okay?
Yeah, we're going to try.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
Very much for your call this morning.
Day.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. If you want to join in this conversation, we've had a number of folks commenting actually on our Facebook page with some questions for you, and instead of actually using the phone this morning. So I'm going to go ahead and try to step up and ask a couple of these questions. First of all, somebody has called into the room and just asked us to re-identify what we're talking about exactly. What's going on August 4th? So James, over to you. There's a report that Patriot Prayer is holding a demonstration in Portland on August 4th. You want to tell us a little more about that?
All right. So Patriot Prayer is holding a demonstration on August 4th. The location is to be determined. There supposedly is the location is going to be released within the next 2 days, but we of course, since we're not on that side, we don't know exactly what Patriot Prayer is going to be up to. But we are pretty dedicated to following them wherever they go. If you need any updates, I would implore you to look at our Facebook page. That definitely will have any information. It will be updated as soon as we know.
And your website or your Facebook page, go ahead and give those identifying factors out.
Right. Look up Rose City Antifa. Be careful. Definitely put just that in. There are fake pages out there that you need to avoid that are trying to definitely get information on people who support our work.
Really good to point that out. But rosecityantifa.org is your website, and that I have also posted to the Positively Revolting Facebook page, so folks who are followers of our page can easily find your website. A couple of clicks, just like that. I kind of want to back up just one more second and say, what is Patriot Prayer? Because we come into this with the assumption that people know what we're talking about. People know who Joey Gibson is, and people who know who the Proud Boys are. But it occurs to me that not everyone listening does. What is Patriot Prayer? I know we only have a few minutes left, but, the snapshot.
We should have gotten into this, but there's when you dedicate your life to it, to something like this, you definitely forget that other people don't have this knowledge also. But Patriot Prayer is essentially a group based out of Vancouver, Washington, formed by one Joey Gibson, that cloaks itself in a kind of broed out Christianity, that a energy drink Christianity, I guess you could say. But they have definitely start, they have over the last 2 years been holding rallies and demonstrations all around the area to kind of whip up and be a meeting place for the alt-right and for the right elements. Mm-hmm. They try to do this basically under the guise of free speech, that they just want to express themselves. I think that's definitely not in bad faith, but that is what their stated goals are, at least.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it just sort of seems like their style of free speech carries messages of dehumanization for many other marginalized communities. And we have definitely seen over this last year acts of violence that they have left in their wakes. Free speech. Again, as you mentioned, speech is not without consequence. Let's go ahead and talk to James. Good morning, James.
Good morning. Thank you, James, for what you're doing. You know, being out there, it's really tough work because, you know, people only look back in hindsight at what Antifa does and actually see that it was a good thing. But right now, everybody's so concerned with keeping order that they're just like, why is everybody fighting? So just, you know, keep that up. And I'm kind of joining the conversation late, but one thing that really annoys me that I really want to point out is, you know, people talk about how Christians don't do this and Christians don't do that, and I think because a lot of these guys profess to be Christian in the Patriot Prayer groups, and you know, just so people, you know, people understand that Christianity has not always been something that's been open, inclusive, something that has been a force for good. Generally, it's generally been a weaponized form of being able to colonize people and be able to remove their humanity for the sake of land grabbing. And I think it's really important to point that out, that people want to start defining what is and isn't, you know, and how can these guys be Christian and say all these terrible things? It's like they're hearkening back to that colonial Christianity that that says that only certain people are allowed to be of the faith or be included in the larger picture, and realizing that, because I mean, Antifa is actually doing the Lord's work, if you want to be honest, in terms of in terms of defending, you know, human rights and being out there and doing that hard work that nobody else wants to do. So I just something I wanted to throw out there. And also, you know, in supporting white supremacy doesn't mean that you have to be white. You know, white supremacy is codified into our laws. So if you walk around with your head held high thinking that because you're a quote unquote law abiding citizen that, you know, all this stuff is going on, it's like a lot of that is just a lot of white supremacy is just buying into what society deems to be a law abiding citizen. So they see Antifa out there doing stuff and they're like, oh, they're so destructive or they're so this or that. It's like, well, sometimes loving somebody and protecting the things you love is destructive. You gotta do some hard work. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Hey, thanks very much for your call, James. I think that there is something about being a law-abiding citizen and propping up systems of oppression because that's sort of the law of the land. That's the way this country was formed. That's the basis of this country. So there is that. But white supremacy is so much more than that, right? And so I just want to kind of make that distinction that people that are unknowingly propping up the status quo are acting in ways that reinforce our systems of oppression. But white supremacy takes it a couple steps further. And I'm always thinking about the horrific acts of violence and intimidation that really drive that wedge forward when we're looking at white supremacist groups and organizing work. It is, hate mongering that sort of is driven by whipping up people's fears around the other as something to be afraid of because they're going to, oh my God, the term white genocide, right?
What a term.
You know, it's like, talk about weaponizing ideologies. There's so much to that to unpack, but we only have 7 minutes left. So let's, and this is a discussion that really does need to keep going. And it's one that obviously we revisit here on Positively Revolting quite often because we need to, because our lives depend on it.
Absolutely. We do what we do because people's lives are at stake, pure and simple. If we don't go out there, if we are not protecting our community and members of our community who are at risk, they will be picked off.
Mm-hmm.
It's as stark as that. And it's interesting, the last caller and you brought up the issue of, you know, people who just support the system, people who want things to, they just don't want any disruptions to occur. And I was thinking about, what is a Nazi? What do you have to do to be a Nazi? And I actually came to a conclusion, you actually don't have to do anything. If you idly sit by, if you allow these things to happen, you're a Nazi.
You're complicit, for sure. Yeah. And again, looking back historically as to how authoritarian regimes take hold, a whole lot of it is for people of conscience to sort of go, I'm not getting involved in this. This is messy. I don't know. I think it's a very true thing what Dante said, right? That for evil to flourish, all it takes is good folks to do nothing. I know I'm paraphrasing, but I do that. Let's go ahead and take one more caller. Let's squeeze in Rachel. Good morning, Rachel. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just have one quick thing. I guess it's kind of a philosophical question. What exactly do you say to someone who still doesn't quite understand the threat to our community? Say, for example, a liberal white man who doesn't feel the physical threat of white supremacy because he will probably never be personally threatened.
Because he's in the least marginalized group, yeah.
Exactly, and doesn't see the comparisons between Trump and, say, you know, early Hitler Mussolini, and they think that's a huge exaggeration, and they don't see how by being complacent and comfortable, they're complicit in something terrible. And what exactly do you say to someone like
that? How do we reach the non-believer, I think is what you're asking. Or at least the politically agnostic.
I'll turn my radio back on and I'll listen to your response.
Thanks, Rachel. It's a great question.
Yeah, it's interesting how to reach people in an everyday life. This is what I would have to say about people who are like, I don't want to participate. There's no opting out at this point. If you're a student of history, if you're a student of why anti-fascism was even created after World War I, everyone has their part. So if you're opting out, you may still become a victim, no matter what your circumstances are.
I think Howard Zinn may have said it best when he said, you can't be neutral on a moving train. And this train is moving, right? It's not like white supremacist organizing just started after Trump took office. No, we know that is not the case. We know that white supremacist organizing has had a very long and wretched, terrible, horrifying history in the Northwest. And we also see it clearly accelerating in the last year and a half as white supremacists and fascist organizers are reinforcing each other and coming together in very dangerous ways. And so, with that in mind, I believe the eternal question of which side are you on is one that needs to be asked. And I think it is super important, Rachel, to your question, to let those folks know that that is not just a rhetorical question. That which side are you on is a real question. So either you are being complicit in the destruction of marginalized communities and in the dehumanization of members of those communities and of the violence that is perpetrated to those communities, or you are actively speaking out against it. I mean, it's pretty much that is the bottom line. And I'm saying this as a white woman. I'm saying this as a queer person. I'm saying this, back in the day when I was in grade school, when I was in high school and I first started coming out, I also espoused pacifism, right? Violence was this horrible thing. And our way was to be nonviolent. And when I first got beat for being a queer kid, I learned really fast that actually self-defense seems like a really good idea. And
it's easy to say that. It's easy to say don't defend yourself when you're the last person,
right?
That's going to be hit.
That's exactly, yes, thank you for cutting to the chase. That was going to be my point. When straight white guys who are doing okay economically are like, let's just talk it out. We can ignore, they're organizing. They're a fringe group, and to oppose them just legitimizes their mess. I've heard that. And I've heard, hey, it's all free speech. Everyone gets to say whatever they want. And I'm here to say, as somebody who has been the victim of violence against a marginalized community several times in my life, I'm going to go ahead and say no. In fact, people don't just get to spread those messages of hate unopposed.
And for minority groups and for people who are queer, why can't we say something once in a while? Why can't we say what we're about?
Mm-hmm.
And why is there always this resistance when marginalized groups want to say something about life, period?
And that is where we're going to have to end it, because we are flat out of time. That hour goes by so quickly. And we thank you very much for listening. Do stay tuned to KBOO all morning long, all week long, for your oral needs. I'm Ani, and we're out of here. Have a great day.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every
Are you bored or unsatisfied with your daily activities? Do you long for a new, exciting experience? If the answer is yes and you're under 21 just like me, then you should consider adding a once-a-week KBOO Youth Collective meeting to your schedule. Side effects will probably include extreme happiness, uncontrollable fits of laughter, a great group of new friends, and yummy snacks. KBOO Youth Collective can cause sudden bouts of inspiration and a yearning to share your words or your inner thoughts with the local community. If joining the collective sounds like a cure for your boredom and lack of an extraordinary after-school activity, then write us at youth@kboo.org or visit us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, or come into one of our Wednesday meetings for a scare-free, risk-free, and always cost-free trial.
KBOO Community Radio is 50. We are celebrating our birthday with a big street fair and party on August 11th from noon to 10 p.m. here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, Oregon.
We'll be broadcasting live bands all day and have an open house celebrating 50 years of KBOO.
There will be a reunion from 2 to 5 during the street party for folks looking to see KBOO volunteers from other eras.
So save the date, Saturday, August 11th, to celebrate the 50 years of KBOO with your community radio station. KBOO Portland.
And this is KBOO.